Stop using your blinker.
Alright, well, we don't want you to crash and die, so. Beer, baseball, nothing news. The show that. Apologies for some audio difficulties that you'll be hearing throughout this episode as we work in the new Pop to Contact podcast studio. Welcome to the Talk to Contact podcast. I am Paul Pleist, the baseball pirate. And this week, we're going to have a two-man show featuring myself and the star of the show, the Nodak Twins fans, all the way from West Fargo, Cody Christie.
Yeah, dynamic duo this evening.
Yes, does but that not, make... not the ambiguously gay duo.
Oh, no. No, no, no. Yeah. Kind of, we're in that lull time. It's kind of, after the All-Star game, we get a couple extra days off here of no baseball. There's no other sports going on. Not like anybody listening to this podcast pays attention to any other sports or anything. But, yeah, it's kind of it's like the depression in the middle of the baseball season while we're waiting for, games to kick off again this weekend.
Yeah, and the Twins ended the first half on a hot streak. Ended up taking 6 of 7, including 3 of 4, and the last 3 in a row from the Detroit Tigers before ending the first half of the season. And then we went into the All-Star break. We got a little bit of news to share there. But I'm wondering if the momentum, if that's a real thing at all, but if there was any, if the All-Star break will break that. The Twins do have the good fortune of coming out here to Oakland to start the second half of the series or the season against a struggling Athletics team. So maybe they'll be able to get back on a hot streak. We're in this baseball wasteland, I guess, of the All-Star break. There's nothing on Monday. Tuesday's the Home Run Derby. Or I shouldn't say nothing. I believe the Futures game was on Monday.
No, Futures game was Sunday. Okay. Home Run Derby, Monday. Tuesday was the game. So we got Wednesday and Thursday here of nothingness. Yes. I mean, the only news coming out is if, like, the few guys from the draft that haven't signed yet, if they're going to sign before the deadline.
Yeah, and I am not one who really enjoys listening to draft signing news or refreshing to see who signed and what signed. Although it does sound like maybe the Twins' second-round pick, Kyle Cody, your namesake, maybe looking at going back to school for his senior season rather than signing with the Twins.
Yeah, it looks like they found something in his physical that they weren't too keen on. This was a guy that was, I mean, at one point thought of as a possible late first rounder, had that type of potential. The Twins got him in, looked at his physical, and are now offering him less than slot value is their current offer. They did have a bigger offer on the table, but they rescinded that once the physical data came in and... So yeah, we'll see if how that plays out. I don't know. I feel like if you're the kid, wouldn't you want to get in and get your contract signed if you needed to have Tommy John or something like that, rather than do it when you're, you know, not.
Yeah, I definitely think contract. So. And then going back to school, if that indeed is what it is, something like that with the elbow or some kind of concern. I mean, even if he goes back to school for a senior season, he's not going to be healthy. He's not going to be able to play if that is the issue. He's going to go under the knife and definitely is going to drop further than the second round coming off of a year without playing. So I understand the Twins may be trying to lowball him here a little bit, but I don't know how much you can hope to improve your stock after the season that he had this past year if there's any kind of injury concern going forward. We did mention, kind of breezed over the All-Star game. And when last we spoke, Brian Dozier had been selected to be part of the final five, or excuse me, was it the final voting, the final two?
Yeah.
To get voted in against some other guys there, and Mike Moustakas was leading the vote. Uh, and And that vote ended up going down to the wire, but Mike Moustakas was voted in by Royals fans and baseball fans across the nation. And then Brian Dozier went out and hit his second walk-off home run of the week to kind of say, hey, you know what, I'm not an all-star, but I'm still a star. then later that same night, found out that I believe it was a replacement for Jose Bautista, who was opted out of the home run derby with some injury concern there. Or not the home run derby, but the all-star game. And so Dozier did make it into the all-star game. And not only did he make it in when he was put into the game, I think in the seventh inning, and his only at-bat hits a home run, because of course he does.
Yeah, it was interesting if you, to see him out there. He didn't get in there very long. They kept Altuve in for about four innings. Kipnis came in for a couple of innings, and then Dozier got the one at bat, got to go out on the field and fill in defensively behind. Glenn Perkins was chosen to be the guy to pitch the ninth inning for the AL squad. So that was probably kind of cool for those two to be on the field together. I mean, if you look at some of the pictures that Dozier had out and Perkins had out, they look like they're having a good time. I mean, it was pretty cool. I don't know, did you see the tweet from Perkins after the game that night? He tweeted at Brian Dozier, "Thanks, Brian Dozier. I didn't want to get the save anyway." So I enjoyed that. So it's nice that they can have, in a game like that, they're having fun. There's like pictures of Dozier running onto the field and making faces at the camera, and he was having a good time. You never know how many. I mean, Perkins has been to three of these in a row now, but for someone like Dozier, maybe this might be his only opportunity to get to play in the game. It was cool for him to have a moment like that to hit the home run, extend the AL lead a little bit, and he definitely made the most of the opportunity. And it's cool when you can think of a guy. Yeah, I think the Twins hadn't had a player hit a home run in the All-Star game since Kirby Puckett in the early 90s. So it had been a while. I'm not sure how many people were still tuning in. I think it was one of the lowest watched All-Star games in quite some time. No big retirement, Rivera and Jeter the last couple of years. So I think some people might have tuned out, but it was still cool for him to have that moment for those baseball fans that were watching. And, maybe next year at this time, he can get voted in some capacity instead of having to be that guy that going through that final vote process and stuff like that.
Okay, and as long as we're talking All-Star Derby, on Monday, did you hang out to watch the Home Run Derby in the new format?
I tuned in. I do the minor league reports as well on Monday nights, so I was kind of flipping between some minor league coverage, listening to some of that on the radio, and then I had to get the All-Star the Derby on as well. So I think overall it was pretty positively received. For people that didn't watch it, each batter was given, instead of in previous years you got a certain amount of outs, so any time you swung the bat and it did not result in a home run, you usually got like 10 outs in one round or whatever it might be. This year they switched it up. They bracketed the players, so they were going head to head against one other player, and then they weren't given a number of outs. You just had 5 minutes to hit as many home runs as you could in that 5 minutes. There were some other caveats, like if you hit a couple over 420 feet, they added on like 30 seconds at the end. You got one timeout that you could use within there, to take a swig of Powerade and put on some pine tar or whatever you needed to do. So they had those in there, but it seemed to flow a little bit better. I think it added a little bit more drama because guys were trying to, like, Albert Pujols won one of his matchups, like, as time was expiring, he hit one out in the first round to knock out Chris Bryant. So it was kind of cool to have, like, instead of, like, a buzzer-beating shot in basketball, you were having a buzzer-beating home run, you know, to advance. It was kind of cool to see Todd Frazier as well, the hometown guy, win the overall crown. To be able to do that in front of his fans was pretty cool. Overall, I think I enjoyed it a little bit more. As instead of it turning into like a 3-hour event, it was a lot more succinct and to the point, and still had a lot of the fun that you want to see out of out of the big boppers.
I really like the new format. I think the head-to-head portion, you know, the fact that they changed it so it's head-to-head really ups the drama. You're not waiting around for those first two rounds, just watching guys hit a ton of home runs, get exhausted. I mean, you felt like you needed to keep watching. You couldn't just check back in. I think my favorite part was just watching Jock Peterson hit in the first round. It just looked like he was barely swinging, and he's launching these 450-foot-plus bombs.
Yeah.
Just like, if anyone I thought was going to hit one into the river, he was the guy I was watching all night. So I was definitely glad to see that improved format. I think it was a lot more fun. And I think I wish the All-Star game in general was as much fun as the All-Star game or the Home Run Derby was. That was a good time. But now the All-Star game and All-Star festivities are over, and it's time to get back into baseball. And the Twins enter the second half of the season 49-40 with the second best record in the American League, trailing only those Kansas City Royals. And so I ask you, are the Twins the second best team in the American League?
Yeah. If you look at a lot of the numbers out there, I think a lot of people would say no. I mean, if you look at, I think Fangraphs put out their projections for the rest of the season, and the Twins had less of a chance of making the playoffs than besides Kansas City, another team within the Central. I still think you see, like, the betting lines for the Twins aren't very good as far as them even making the playoffs. We've talked about this. We sit here now with 73 games left in the season, you know, a little less than half. The trade deadline is approaching. There are obvious glaring weaknesses with this team at catcher, at shortstop. What can this team do with the bullpen besides Glenn Perkins? So I think we're kind of in this flux state here over the next couple weeks of trying to weed out. You know, you talked about we have this series with Oakland to start off. And they do this little West Coast swing here before they come back and face the Yankees, who are also in first place at home. But this team has been very good at home and not as good on the road. So I think this road trip, this coming out of the break here, you talked about how, the Twins were pretty hot entering the break. They were playing pretty decently. They had to have that pretty good comeback in that ninth inning miracle comeback.
Yeah, that was pretty fun to watch. Down, what is it, 1-6 entering the inning? And
yeah.
The Twins, I think, were at that point 0-35 when trailing after 8. So, and all of a sudden, things just started happening, including Kurt Suzuki, probably the most important hit-by-pitch of the season for the Twins.
Yes. Is there a clutch hit-by-pitch? Like stat somewhere, that should be something that teams start keeping track of. So, yeah, I mean, we'll have to see where this team is sitting. It's been out there that, you know, the Twins have those holes I talked about to fill. Overall, if I was a betting man, would I bet that the Twins are the second best team, that they're going to be playing, you know, like Kansas City in the AL Championship Series? No, I would not make that bet. But we've been waiting for this team, you know, on this podcast, we've been waiting for this team to come back down to earth for weeks now, and that hasn't been the case. You know, the Kyle Gibsons and the Tommy Malones and these players that we expect to regress a little, haven't been doing that. And even with failures from Danny Santana this year and Kenis Vargas and Oswaldo Arcia being down at AAA, this team has found ways to continue to get the right pieces in place in order to be successful. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Twins make it to the playoffs at this point. But yeah, I'm still wouldn't count on it.
Yeah, I think that you hit it on the head there. We've been waiting for this team to kind of come back to earth, and what we saw that kind of happen a little bit at the end of the first half with the Houston Astros, who were the hottest team in the American League for the better part of the first half, and then they lost six in a row to close it out there leading into the All-Star break, and now they've dropped back to second place in their division. And so I think that just kind of it opens your eyes that the Twins are just that they're a six-game losing streak back from falling right back to probably where we thought they are, or we think they're going to end, closer to 500. But even so, they're nine games over 500 right now. And if they, for them to finish the season, if they can go 36-37 in their last 73 games, that puts them at 85 Ws. And that's very likely good enough for one of those two wild card spots. Now, I don't know that the Twins have that front-of-the-rotation guy that might be able to set up to win that game. I might take just about anybody else's ace over who the Twins are going to have, because remember, Irvin Santana, no matter how good he is in the second half, is not going to be there. But I think even for the Twins, to be talking about a Twins team that can really just kind of plod their way along to an 85-win season, that's pretty exciting just to be talking about playoff baseball and not feel like we're maybe jumping the gun and way over our heads here.
The nice thing too, you talked about it there, but when it comes down to it, those teams fighting for that wild card spot might not get to line up their rotation in order for their preferred pitcher to start that game. They might be fighting for just to get the wins in order to be able to get into that game, and then it might just be whoever the best available is to get into that, that one win to make it into the actual postseason. So it's definitely, you put it in a little bit better perspective, just saying, even if they go, they're a 500 team the rest of the way, they might have that chance at least getting one of the wild cards or being in the hunt for those, especially with the way those teams in the AL East have been, have been beaten up on each other, and there still doesn't seem like there's a clear-cut favorite out there. You talked about the AL West. It'll be interesting to see how the Angels, Astros, how they how that fiddles out as we continue to move forward. And, Seattle has underachieved a little bit out there, too, so that would be interesting, too, if they're able to turn things around and play some better baseball as well. So I could see them, yeah, definitely getting one of those wild card spots. I talked about, just setting up the rotation, and quickly, if people hadn't heard yet, the Twins are coming out of the break and have set up the rotation. They're going to start with Santana on Friday's game just because he has he's only had a couple starts so far at the big league level, so freshest arm, get him in there. And then they'll do Hughes and Malone to finish out. And I liked that decision just because I want Malone to be able to pitch against Oakland just because of how he left there last year on a little bit of a sour note. So it'll be nice to have him be able to step in back in the whatever they're calling it now, the O Coliseum or whatever.
O.co, overstock.com. And I will be there on Friday night to watch Irvin really? Santana. We're not going to go on Saturday, but my wife and I will be back on Sunday. So we'll be watching both Santana and Maloney yep. go out there and pitch their stuff. Unfortunately, I think that Saturday is probably my favorite matchup with Phil Hughes against the electric Sonny Gray. And that curveball of his is just... That's a beautiful thing. But the other thing I like about the way they've set this up is you start Gibson and Mike Pelfrey both at home to start the second half. And I really like what Gibson has done at home for the Twins this season. Or really the entire Twins staff has pitched well at home. I think they have one of the top 10 best home records in baseball this year. I think their home record is, I believe, 31 and 16. Sorry, just looking at it right now. So they've been playing fantastic ball at home, and I like the fact that you get Gibson there to open it back up, and that should be a lot of fun. And hopefully the Oakland Athletics can continue to scuttle here a little bit, and the Twins can get back on a roll starting into the second half. And you know, if they can take 2 out of 3, and all of a sudden they're 51 and 41, 10 games up, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a great way to start the second half. And I think one thing we've seen the last couple of years from this Twins squad is that when it gets into August and September, this team is so far out of it that they really take a nosedive. And for this team to continue to be, you know, even, like I said, I mean, they could lose even 10 in a row, and they're still right around 500, still competitive for that last wild card spot. They're going to be playing meaningful games to the end of the season, and that means I don't think they're going to have that tank dive to the bottom of the roster or bottom of the standings there. And so I'm really excited to see what this team can do. I'm excited to see how Paul Molitor is going to handle some of these arms as they get more innings on them into the dog days of August and into September. I mean, I don't know. I'm very excited about it. I think one thing I'm not excited about, and I don't know, I haven't done enough research here to think about it, is what's going on with Kenny's Vargas. Because it sounds like he's not hitting down at AA since he got moved down. He wasn't hitting at the big league roster, and I'm just wondering.
He got pulled out of a game the other night too. Like the Mankiewicz benched him. I don't know. I didn't hear the whole final story, but yeah, that's definitely interesting. And we saw Arcia did the same thing when he. He got sent down to AAA, just wasn't hitting, and some of that might have been an injury concern with Mr. Arcia. But now Arcia's been on quite the hot streak. He's hit home runs in 7 of his last 11 games, and 8 of his last 13 games. So it probably won't be long before we see Arcia back up to be in that Twins outfield. But yes. What I just wanted to quickly say too, you said Gibson and Pelfrey at home. The Twins do have another road series in there too.
Well,
they go to Los Angeles, so that'll line up so that Irvin Santana will be pitching there too against his former team. So Gibson, Pelfrey, Santana will be against the Angels. And then if that continues, we'll get Hughes, Malone, and Gibson will be starting the Yankees games at home.
Either way, Gibson's coming home to get that start, so I like that. Just another time through the order.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so speaking of the order, the Twins roster, their position players as we head into the second half of the season, Kurt Suzuki behind the plate, probably one of the areas the Twins could look to improve if they're going to try to make a move as we approach the trade deadline here. Joe Mauer at first, Brian Dozier and Trench at second base, Trevor Plouffe at third base, shortstop, maybe a question mark of who should be there. I feel like it should be Eduardo Escobar more days than it's Danny Santana, but the Twins seem committed to letting Santana continue to flail. And he did show a couple of sparks there right before the break. And then Rosario, Hicks, and Torrey Hunter across the outfield with Miguel Sano and his hot bat swinging it through the DH spot. So are there any things that you look shaking up there? You talked about Arcia coming up.
I can see them.
Buxton is close.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like Buxton's still multiple weeks away. From what I saw, Lavelle Neal tweeted something out. Like, it's still going to be a little bit, and they're probably going to send Buxton on a rehab. So I don't know if we'll see him before August at this point. But, yeah, I could easily see the Twins sending Santana back down to AAA and then using, Rosario and Hicks could be in center field or depending on matchups and have Arcia fit in there too in the outfield. But, yeah, and then you could use Escobar at shortstop. You know, they might throw Nunez out there every once in a while Escobar.
Need to get that guy off the roster.
Yeah, well, I mean, that could be another solution, too, you know. Do you cut bait with Nunez and leave Santana and Escobar as your two shortstop options? I don't know. I feel like I would rather have Santana down at AAA getting more regular at bats.
Right.
I'm fine with Nunez being on the bench at the major league level because he's been adequate enough and can be a pinch runner if we need him. It'll be interesting to see. You know, is this team going to go out and get an upgrade at catcher? You know, they have Suzuki and Eric Fryer on the roster now. But, you know, neither one of those is a player to write home about. So, do they want to make some kind of upgrade there for the stretch run? Is shortstop something that they could go out and get? Maybe someone like Ian Desmond, who has struggled mightily for the Nationals this year. I believe is a free agent at the end of the season. Would be in an expiring contract and might not take a lot to get him. Because he's kind of fallen out of favor there with the Nationals. So I don't know if that would be much of an upgrade. I think Phil Mackey tweeted out maybe the Twins going after someone like Jimmy Rollins to play shortstop, almost like they did with that year they brought in Orlando Cabrera, who was on the end of his deal and getting up there in age and wasn't before getting back into the getting back on a team that needed him more or had been struggling. So maybe coming to a new environment could, you know, spark something in Jimmy Rollins to be just what the Twins need, you know, a shortstop that doesn't look ridiculous in the batter's box and has you know, enough skills to make the plays he needs to make on the defensive side. So those would be some areas to look at, I think, for the Twins as we're closing in on the trade deadline here at the end of the month.
Yeah, and I think that Oswaldo Arcia represents a guy that you can add without having to make that trade know, there, because he can come up, and even if you're just bringing him up to be that bench bat, he's the kind of guy you can bring in for Kurt Suzuki in those middle to late innings, get that bat in the lineup there, and then bring in Eric Fryer for defensive purposes to bring it to shut it down there. And at least then you have a little more respectable pop off the bench, and it's not Eduardo Nunez or Eric Fryer as your options. I mean, you have a little bit more, you know, especially if you've got a righty on the mound, you can bring Oswaldo Arcia in to just mash there, I mean, or at least force the other manager maybe to make a bullpen move there and get somebody out earlier. So I think that he represents a significant move, especially if he can continue to be on this hot streak that he was on right before we went into the All-Star break there. So I think that that's an option. We already talked about maybe bringing Eduardo Escobar in to be that regular shortstop and maybe what that could do for the lineup, because, I mean, just Danny Santana's just been looking lost up there. And then of course, what are the Twins going to do with the bullpen? Because I think that the bullpen, there's also some questions. And the first question I have for the bullpen is, what's the deal with Trevor May? You know, I think that he had the most wins above replacement of the pitching staff going into the break, and then they decided, hey, we're going to move you to the pen for a while, probably because he's the youngest and least experienced there, and he just kind of doesn't have that seniority there. But how long can they leave him there? And if they are intending to maybe package him as part of a trade trip, which I would recommend highly against, but have they lost some value just by already having moved him to the pen? Our team's going to try to get pull a quick one there and try to play down his value. I mean, how long before Trevor May is back in the rotation? I mean, an injury, yes. Mike Pelfrey continuing to be Mike Pelfrey, yes. But can you just leave him back there to be that kind of swing long man in the back of the bullpen? Or,
I mean, we talked about how the bullpen needs some kind of upgrade, and maybe that is what May can be for that bullpen without the Twins having to go out and make a trade. I mean, Pelfrey has been a little rough in these most recent starts, so I'm not sure how long the string is going to be for him and how much leeway they're going to give him. But I think the Twins have gotten more than they ever imagined they could get out of Mike Pelfrey this year, more than I was hoping to get out of him coming into the season. So I think for May, I don't think he'll be traded. I think the Twins are committed to him as a young guy that can be part of this rotation, especially, you know, as we're looking forward. I think the Twins also wanted to see how he would respond in this kind of role, because as we're moving forward, you know, if the Twins going into next year have guys like the likes of Santana and Hughes and Nolasco, if he's healthy, Jose Berrios will likely have a very good shot to make the rotation coming out of spring training. You know, they're going to have options out there for starters. So maybe this is the role that May is long term going to fit into for this club. You know, Glenn Perkins at one time was a starter that didn't work out. But I know it's not exactly the same case with Trevor May, because he was doing some very good things as a starting pitcher. So it's definitely going to be intriguing to see how this develops as this team is moving forward for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I think that there's one person. I was kind of thinking the Twins might try to bring in Jason Frazier, a name we talked about, I think, last week on the show, and he's since signed with the Braves after they lost Jason Gridley with, an Achilles injury there when he was covering first. I feel like that's the second or third time we've seen that this year already, but that's not going to happen. And maybe you're right. Maybe the best thing the Twins can do for this season and to upgrade the roster is look within and stand pat, because you don't want to make a big splash to bring in a bullpen arm, because bullpen arms, I mean, I don't even want to bring this up, but Matt Capps, Wilson Ramos, and we've seen what that's done. I mean, and the Twins, I think Terry Ryan, they were talking about the other day that no one has any regrets over that. Well, maybe no one in the front office, but I think a lot of fans regret the Twins making that move to bring in Matt Capps. And I don't want to see them do that again. I mean, obviously no one could foresee the bilateral leg weakness coming and Joe Mauer's concussion issues. But I think that maybe the best thing that the Twins can do is stand pat, because unless they can go out and get a guy like Johnny Cueto or find a way to deal for Cole Hamels without giving away the farm, that I just don't think there's that availability to bring in a front up, you know, the top of the rotation guy or a bullpen arm that's going to make a big enough impression with this season going forward, that, you know, maybe you just stamp that. I mean, maybe you can look at Nick Birdie. Maybe if you just want a fireball, you can bring him in, just a guy to throw to 100. I mean, there are options.
Or Berrios, even as a relief pitcher, as his innings are getting closer to, you know, younger pitchers have an innings limit, but as the season's winding down, maybe they say, you know what, we're going to need you in September, so we're going to shift you for your last, you know, 10 appearances to be a bullpen guy. You're going to pitch every other day regularly out of the bullpen, and then you're going to get called up, and you're going to be, you know, one of the guys that's pitching some important innings on a team that's fighting for a playoff spot. I could see something like that, or if...
Maybe Alex Meyer turns it around. I mean, especially as we get towards September and the rosters expand there, you could just bring up, a bunch of dudes to see what can happen. But, it'll be interesting to see, and I think that maybe the best thing the Twins can do is stamp pat, because I don't know that you can get – I don't know that there's that many catchers out there that could make a significant improvement. I think I saw some people tweeting about the Twins being linked to A.J. Pierzynski. I would stay as far away from that as I can. I just don't know that there's an upgrade available that makes sense for this team, who's probably in all likelihood performing a little bit ahead of schedule, and I wouldn't want to see them – go all in on a season this season with this current team, because I don't think that they have the rotation arms to get it done. despite what we've seen from Mike Pelfrey and Kyle Gibson pitching above his peripherals this season so far.
Yeah, I bet Oakland would like to have Addison Russell back if they could.
Absolutely.
But yeah, you never know that, you know, when you're making those trades. Sometimes you got to go all in for the chance to, you know, make that flags fly forever or whatever. But I mean, I agree with you. I think this team has overshot a lot of where we thought they were going to be, obviously, going into the season. But you don't also want to get rid of, you know, you don't want to trade Max Kepler and a Cole Stewart and those guys that are going to be maybe might not be all-stars, but are going to be good regulars on this club and give up those years of team control and things like that. So, it would just be nice, you know, as we're moving forward. We've had a lot of good things happen so far this season, but you definitely don't want to make that move that's going to handicap you when Miguel Sano is more experienced, when Byron Buxton's more experienced, and we have that new core that is going to lead this team, hopefully, to multiple winning seasons in a row.
Yeah, and we touched about maybe seeing Jose Berríos come up in a relief role. Is there any chance that the Twins see him starting in the Twins uniform, or is he just too far down the pecking order right now? We talked about Trevor May being in the bullpen, probably being that number six guy if they need someone. Is he that next guy after Trevor May? If there's two guys losing out, did we then see Berríos? Or is that just too much of a pipe dream, considering the way he struggled in his first AAA start? Do we need to see a little bit from him before Twins fans can start salivating too heavily?
Yeah, I mean, I think fans got to see him again, too, in the Futures game. I believe he was one of the few, or maybe the only pitcher on the World Team that didn't give up any runs in his outing. So he got to start again, so that was pretty cool. I think, you know, if we're going to see him this year, I don't know how much. Depends on where the Twins are at, you know, a lot, I think, because bringing him up this year when he's, I don't think he's he doesn't even have to be on the 40-man roster yet, does he? I don't think so.
Nope.
So if he doesn't even have to be on there, if they're putting him on a year early, I know at the end of that it affects his service time and stuff like that. So if we're not going to see him early in, you know, the end of August or something like that, maybe there's not a point. I know Rochester is leading their division at the halfway point for their All-Star break that they're just coming out of. So maybe the Twins say, you know, we'd rather have Berríos pitching in some of those playoff games down there. But I'm sure they're going to take into account, you know, the good of the major league team comes over the good of a minor league team. And you see that with a lot of teams that are in those playoff runs. They have good players are taken from them because they need, they're needed at the big league level. I think with the failure of the poor season by pitchers like Alex Meyer, Cole Stewart's kind of been up and down. I mean, Berríos is that name down in the farm system, the one of the top, you know, three prospects for the Twins coming into the season, and he's the one that the only one we haven't seen yet. We got to see Sano, we got to see Buxton. You know, he's that next guy that fans are going to be excited about seeing. It's going to be interesting to see if it's a relief role or a starting role and how early it will be. But, yeah, like you said, there's kind of a logjam right now in the starting rotation.
Yeah, that's a pretty good problem to have. And if anyone out there wondering why we haven't been talking about Ricky Nolasco and the issues that he's been dealing with, he did go ahead and have ankle surgery over the break here and is likely done for the year. I guess there's some possibility he could come back at the tail end of the season. But I think we've seen him throw his last pitch for the Twins this season. And so he's out of the mix, but will definitely definitely be back in the mix when we talk about who's going to be coming out of spring training next season. We're a long way from there. Before we can get to next season, we have to get through the late innings, something that this team has been struggling with this season. Really, aside from Glenn Perkins, the back of the bullpen has been pretty shaky of late. We saw Aaron Thompson start the season with great success, but then he couldn't get it done. Ryan Pressly, I thought, was putting in some nice performances and not getting nearly enough press, but he's out on the DL now with a lat injury, I think. I think the earliest he can be expected to be back is probably the 21st of June, I believe. And with those lat injuries, I think a lot of times 2 weeks isn't enough for a guy to be back and throwing well. I think it's closer to a 3 or 4 week injury. And so I wonder, is Trevor May going to be enough? I mean, J.R. Graham has done quite well at the back of the bullpen, especially for a Rule 5 pick. But do the Twins have enough? Can Brian Dunsing be the Brian Dunsing, maybe the Dunslinger, to use a nickname from the past? But Casey Fien has been very hittable of late. Blaine Boyer has kind of gotten away from it. He's not striking anyone out, so that's always an issue. It's very curious. I'm wondering if this bullpen continue to put it together. And then, of course, let's not forget about our own old friend Tim Stauffer, who was released earlier this season, caught on with the independent Sugarland Skeeters over the break as well. So he's off the board, in case you out there in listener land were hoping for a reunion. Yes, it'll be interesting. I just don't know what the solution is. I think you just have the wink and a prayer we talked about earlier. Maybe the best thing they can do is hold pat, and maybe Casey Fien can get a couple more strikeouts. I think he's averaging like 5 strikeouts per 9 after being closer towards that 10 range last couple of seasons. So we need to see him miss some more bats. Blaine Boyer hasn't struck anyone out all season and continues to just mystify me and probably the rest of baseball with how is he getting it done. And so it's I feel like we're almost kind of slapping it together and see what's going to stick here as we head into the second half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about, you know, down in the minor leagues, maybe there's some guys that could be helpful. You talked about Alex Meyer. Lester Oliveros was doing very well earlier in the year, but has had some more hiccups. But a guy that could come in and maybe strike some guys out anyway. We talked about Berrios. We've seen Ryan O'Rourke come up, and maybe that's someone that they would consider more long term. And maybe even someone like AJ Atchter, who's down there and doing pretty well. ERA is under 3, has struck out more than a batter an inning, doesn't walk a lot of guys, so maybe that's someone. As we're moving forward, that the Twins, I mean, Michael Tonkin's still down there and is on the 40-man roster, so he knows that that route to that Rochester airport pretty well at this point, being back and forth so many times over the last couple seasons. So I think you talked about too how Molitor's going to handle this pitching staff as we're moving forward, and I think that's one thing that the team is going to do is I think we're going to see a lot of those like last two guys in the bullpen being moved back and forth and getting new guys up here and getting fresh arms up here and sending them back down. So I think the Twins are going to use this 40-man roster. And the back end of it to their advantage here as we're moving through the end of the season here and trying to find, you know, that should Michael Tonkin be on this team moving forward? Should, the Atchter that I talked about or Ryan O'Rourke, are these guys that can help this team for a playoff run? That's yet to be seen, but it'll be something that fans can definitely look for as we're getting closer.
Okay, and then I guess the only other news that we saw come out here over the All-Star break was that the Franchise 4 was announced across baseball for every team, and the Minnesota Twins Biggest surprise here, no Joe Mauer, but led the way by Harmon Killebrew, Kirby Puckett, excuse me, Tony Oliva, and Rod Carew. I mean, I expected to see Joe Mauer, but I've got no complaints with the four guys on the Twins' Mount Rushmore, so to speak.
Yeah, the one guy I saw some complaints about maybe not being on there was the fact that Walter Johnson was included on the Twins franchise ballot, even though he played when the team had yet to move to Minnesota. And Walter Johnson, obviously the big train, was considered one of the best pitchers of all time, or still is considered one of the best pitchers of all time. So I saw some complaints maybe that he didn't really get to get recognized or represented on any team or by any team, where then you had like Nolan Ryan was on, I think, three different teams or three different franchise fours. So I think some people were a little disappointed that someone like maybe that Walter Johnson should have made it over someone like Oliva. I mean, as a Twins fan, I think when the Twins haven't really embraced that those years before the team moved to Minnesota, they don't put guys in the Twins Hall of Fame that played with the team when they were back in Washington. You know, they haven't really embraced that history. And as far as the history of this team's when they've been in Minnesota and what these guys have meant to this franchise, the four names that you mentioned, Killebrew, Puckett, Oliva, and Carew, those are the guys that all Twins fans are going to associate with this team. Mauer, I think just because of the way things have gone recently for him, wasn't considered or wasn't one of the picks. And I'm definitely fine with him being left off at this point. Maybe if they do this again in, 20, 25 years, maybe Mauer makes it in over someone like Oliva. But
if he's going to make it in, I think Tony O is the first guy out here.
Yep.
But I agree. Like, I've got no problem with Mauer not being on this right now. He still has some legacy left to write. And I'm not surprised that I am surprised that he's not on there, but I have no complaints there. So with that, then, we're going to take a break. We're going to put our beers down, or maybe our empty bottles down. Go refill, and hopefully when we come back, we'll be joined by the legendary J_Korn as we give out our pitcher and hitter of the first half award. So don't turn your podcast dial if that's a real thing that you have on your audio listening device. And we'll be back here on the Talk to Matt.
It's just the kind of place you go when you've got no one to hold. See, there's this girl in the city, and her name is Kerosene.
Now, as we begin our first and second half of the podcast in the second half of the Major League Baseball season, it's time for the pitcher and hitter of the first half. And I think that we're going to change things up here, and we're going to start with the hitter of the first half. And for me, this one's pretty easy. Brian Dozier hit .256 with a .328 on-base percentage and a .513 slugging percentage. Good for a WRC plus of 131 and 3.3 wins above replacement. He has 19 home runs, 50 RBIs, and 9 stolen bases in 88 games for the Twins so far this season. And despite the fact that Trevor Plouffe is also having a very nice season, 259, 320, 449, also better than league average WRC plus at 113, and has himself accounted for 2.5 WAR, which I think for most seasons will be enough to get him that first half hitter of the year. For me, it's Brian Dozier, far and above, and a couple of honorable mentions for Torii Hunter and Eddie Rosario, who are both having surprisingly good first halves for the Mets. Twins. So I'll turn it over to the two of you gentlemen, if either one of you thinks you have an argument against Brian Mitchell.
No, I think, I mean, you hit on a lot of it for Dozier. I think, you know, Plouffe has continued to impress me as he's become more mature and has become more confident in the field and at the plate. We wanted to make sure we mentioned him. I think Torrey Hunter has done some, you know, he surprised us a little with his performance so far this year. I think offensively I was expecting a little bit more of a regression than we've seen from him. So hopefully that trend continues for the second half here. I mean, we could have had Miguel Sano on this list for his, you know, like week and a half that he's been in the major leagues. But obviously he's started his career on fire here. He's getting walks and looking like a very experienced hitter. But just didn't have the longevity that you would need to be the hitter for the entire first half. Yeah, I think it's pretty clearly got to be Mr. Dozier. Jay, you got anything to throw in the bucket here?
Well, I would make two quick points. The first is not only has he hit, but he's hit in the clutch. I mean, he's had two walk-off home runs just in the last week. He's batting at the top of the order every single day. He's scoring runs. But what I really want to do is make a case for Brian Dozier, the Gold Glove second baseman. The guy makes every play that you could possibly ask. He's slick on the double play. He hasn't had a solid shortstop really all season. I think you could make a strong case, and I think you'd be able to make a stronger case as we move forward that Brian Dozier deserves a Gold Glove this year. And Paul, you're the one that always takes you take fielding, you take defense into account when we give out these awards, and I think that's a key component here.
Yeah, and we're actually going to do a Defender of the First Half award, and I think this could be a good season to be looking at Brian Dozier for that Gold Glove award. But there's so many guys at second place that do so. I mean, you're competing against the likes of Jose Altuve, who's having another great season for the Houston Astros. Robinson Cano is having a down year, I think, which gives Dozier that feather in his cap this year. But Jason Kipnis is just fantastic for the Indians. And so second base is kind of full of superstars across the league. So that it's going to be tough for him to be that Gold Glove second baseman for the Twins, despite all that he does for the Twins on both sides of the ball. But at least we're all in agreement that Brian Dozier is the top-to-contact hitter of the first half. And since you brought up defense, I guess we can go there. Cody, you want to brief us on defenders in the running for defender of the first half?
Yeah, so as we're looking at some of the fielding numbers, I mean, you're obviously going to have some of the names that we just mentioned. Trevor Plouffe has done to look at the Trevor Plouffe that's on the field now playing third base compared to that first year he had moved to the hot corner after they said he was going to be an outfielder for sure, and then kind of moved into third base out of necessity. But the player he's turned into here last year and this year at third base is pretty remarkable. Making the plays, being well above average at that position for the Twins after, you know, playing his entire minor league career as a shortstop. I mean, that transition, there's obviously, it's on the same side of the diamond, but there are some different skills that go along with being that third baseman. Dozier, we can also throw in the discussion then at second base. Sometimes the defensive metrics aren't a friend to Mr. Dozier, getting to balls, you know, on the outskirts of his range, sometimes are a little troublesome for him, but he does make some stupendous plays when he is out there. And then some of our outfielders have scored very well. Aaron Hicks is doing some good things as far as if you look at, like, defensive runs saved. He's right behind Plouffe for the team lead. Plouffe leads the way with five. Byron Buxton has four, according to FanGraphs. And then Hicks and Shane Robinson and Eddie Rosario all have a couple. under their belts. So yeah, Hicks and Rosario out there in the outfield have also been doing good things, and you have to wonder, you know, if Hicks had been up here more consistently, would there be more to look at? Or even if Byron Buxton had more than, you know, Buxton has under 100 innings and already has 4 defensive runs saved compared to 5 for Plouffe in 700 innings out there. So, definitely some good candidates there. If I'm picking my winner, I think I'm giving it to Plouffe.
I'm also going to go with Plouffe for a lot of the reasons you just mentioned, but I do want to throw in a very honorable mention for Joe Mauer, and here's why. Joe Mauer's never going to, you know, I one time thought he was going to be a Gold Glove first baseman. I don't think he's ever going to be that first baseman, but what he is a guy that's again, going out there every day. His errors are very low. He's solid. I think he helps, you know, those conferences on the mound. Joe has been surprisingly vocal in those, whether it's positioning or pitch selection or whatever it is. I think he's the captain of the infield. I've been impressed with the way he's managed with the shift and the different defensive alignments and holding runners on and all these other different things. So my vote's for Trevor Plouffe, but I think we got to at least give Mauer a bone here and give him a nod for the progress that he's made and the stability that he's provided in the infield.
Yeah, and I think I'll go ahead and make it a clean sweep for Trevor Plouffe. I did want to kind of give it to Brian Dozier just because when you look at it with the eye test, Brian Dozier makes these amazing plays. And Aaron Hicks, I think, has been on more highlight reels than any other twin this season. And when you look at some of the defensive numbers, like over at Fangraphs, Aaron Hicks grades out very well across the board. It just, Trevor Plouffe has done it in over twice as many innings. And Cody mentioned that, I mean, we saw Trevor Plouffe grow up and learn to play third base on the fly, a trial by fire, if you will, in front of, you know, thousands of fans every night. He had to learn a new position at the big league level, and he has progressed season after season after season to the fact where he is that Gold Glove caliber defensive third baseman. And obviously he's not going to be with some of the big name third basemen out there. He's not going to be in line for that award, but the defense he plays is above average at third base. So we've seen him really come full circle to a guy who was barely passable at third base to a guy now who is a plus defender. And I think it's only right that we give Trevor Plouffe these mad props and award him the Talk to Contact Defender of the First Half.
Now, let me ask you guys this. Let me ask you this real quick. Is Trevor Plouffe going to remain a Twin through 2015?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You can't, I mean, why would you move him? You've already got Sano in the lineup. I mean, why would you move him to make room for someone else?
I'm not sure, but I think you could put Sano at third and get yourself, I don't know, whatever you'd like, a shortstop, starting pitcher, whatever you need. I think now might be the time to sell high. That's just my personal opinion. I do think he'll be with the team, but I would like to entertain some trading offers, is all.
Nope. No chance that happens. Zero.
I mean, the Twins still have multiple years of control. I get what you're saying, Jay. I think if the right offer was out there, they might consider it, I guess. But I think they would have to be thoroughly overwhelmed by the deal just because of what Plouffe means, not only on the field, but in the clubhouse as well, and just to the organization in general. They like to stick with those guys that have been with the team for multiple years.
Well, I've become a big Trevor Plouffe fan. He started to turn it around. I think we all saw last season, had a strong last, but this season he's really come into his own. I think he's established himself as, like, you know, a top handful American League third baseman. I think he could put his name right up there with just about any of them when it comes to stability and just all-around game. Plouffe has me won over.
Okay, and then that just leaves our first segment of the second half, the pitcher of the first half. And I think there's 4 names here that we need to consider. Glenn Perkins, Kyle Gibson, Tommy Maloney Baloney, a.k.a. Tommy Gunn of late, and, of course, friend of the podcast, Trevor May. So would either of you like to make a case for one of those four gentlemen?
I'll go first, and my vote's going to be clear and concise here. I don't really think that there's a close second place. My vote's for Glenn Perkins. I just the guy's been perfect, and he's been dominant. I mean, like dominant, like top two or three closers in the game this year. He's from the left side. He's proven that he can get more than three outs, which is something I really wanted to see when Molitor took over. He's done that on multiple occasions. I think he's got to get the talk to contact pitcher of the first half. In my opinion, he's got my vote.
When I'm looking at the guys, I think Perkins is a very good candidate. Yeah, but the Twins had for the first time since like 2006 when Lariano and Santana did it. They had two pitchers with sub three ERAs, starting pitchers, and going into this season, you know, Kyle Gibson and Tommy Malone weren't high on everyone's radar, you know, they were just supposed to be those guys filling in spots near the back end, and Malone, not even that, you know, as he's had his ups and downs and some trials and tribulations this year. But for me, my pick is Kyle Gibson. If the team had, if the wild card game was being played today, I would want Kyle Gibson making that start. I would want him out there just because he has pitched the best. He's had the best stuff out of the starting staff. What he's been able to do with that changeup this year to both right and left-handed hitters. I know that's been a focus under Neil Allen, but Gibson has really embraced that. We've seen the successes. He's been a ground ball machine, a double play machine. Even when guys are getting on against him, he's found ways to get out with little or no damage. And that's a big difference from the Kyle Gibson we saw last year. Last year, Gibson was giving up multiple runs in multiple innings because he couldn't find a way to get out of it. And he switched his mindset a little and gone from, he doesn't always need to be a strikeout pitcher to get out of an inning. He can use that defenders. And he's been able to be a new pitcher this year while still being able to get strikeouts with his slider, using that changeup. So for me, it's Kyle Gibson. So, Paul, you're going to have to break the tie.
I'll be the tiebreaker. And, Jay, I think it's very hard to go against Glenn Perkins here. What he has done in the first half has just been remarkable, and he's done everything that you could ask him to do as a closer. Was he 28 for 28 in save opportunities, and just has that one loss on his record when he allowed an inherited runner to score. Just been phenomenal. But I'm going to go with Cody here and because of the fact that Kyle Gibson has pitched over three times as many innings as Glenn Perkins. Kyle Gibson has managed to strand more than 80% of his base runners, and he's gotten his K per nine up to over six after only striking out six batters in his first 22-plus innings through March and April. He's just been phenomenal since then. And yes, maybe you look at some of the numbers and it seems unsustainable, but his stuff has always been great. You've always heard about him talking about what great stuff that he has. So you know that he can miss bats. He's proving that here as the season goes on. And he's just been, I mean, you look at his numbers in June and July, just fantastic. I love what he's been doing. So I really do expect him to continue to kind of improve his peripherals and kind of improve them closer to where he is with his ERA. And I expect him to be just as good in the second half. Maybe that ERA changes it a little bit, but I continue to expect him to be very successful here into the second half. And I agree with Cody. If the Twins are in a one-game winner-takes-all scenario right now, and you have a chance to pick who you want on the mound, I want Kyle Gibson out there. I will go ahead then and award the pitcher of the first half to Kyle Gibson. So Kyle Gibson, Brian Dozier,
Big Stoppa,
and Trevor Plouffe, your first half award winners. Let's go ahead and give them a round of applause, gentlemen. Okay. Next up then, Jay, I understand that you're behind the wheel of a car right now. So I will not ask you to disclose whether or not you are drinking a beer from around the world or just around our nation. I give you a pass. Thank you. But have you possibly had a beer in the last week that you'd like to throw a shout out to?
I sure would. We recently made a purchase in bulk of the Fulton Ringer. The Fulton Ringer, it's the orange label. It is very good. I like all beers from Fulton, more or less. I wanted the War and Peace, which is like 18% something crazy out, but my wife wouldn't go for that. So we got about two cases of the Ringer, and I'm looking forward as soon as I arrive home from the city to indulging in a few of those. Fulton, the Ringer, now available in your favorite retail outlet.
Okay, and Cody, how about in West Fargo?
I'm having from the Fargo Brewing Company. They've kind of made some of their brews a lot. Had been just stuff you could get on tap before, but their six packs have become much more readily available, and even some cans for people going out to the lakes and stuff like that here in the summer. So I'm having from them. I've had it on a previous show a while back too. It's the Wood Chipper IPA from them, obviously paying homage to the Wood Chipper from the movie Fargo.
Oh yeah,
sure, you betcha. So they look. They use some local, grains in it, stuff like that. It still has a good hoppy taste. They make it in, you know, since they're a little bit, they aren't a huge brewery, but they're pretty big for this area, so they, you know, can make it in some smaller batches and really concentrate on having some good flavor. It has there's still some citrus taste in there, a little bit of pine even, like a woodsy taste to it, which is different from some other IPAs. Out of their options, it's probably, or their varieties, it's probably my favorite.
Okay, and I took a book or page out of the Cody Christie handbook and purchased a Stone sampler pack. Last week I had the Arrogant Bastard and got a little bit arrogant towards the end of the show there. But this week I'm drinking their Saison. It's a farmhouse ale with some... and also, this may be the first time we've all been drinking a beer from the state in which we live. Cody, you got the beer from North Dakota. Jay, the Minnesota beer. And I'm drinking a beer from the great state of California. This Saison Air is a nice beer. It's made with some herbs. I think there's like some lavender and some thyme. But it finishes very dry with a little bit of like a peppery taste to it. It's a good beer. It's a good beer served cold. I wouldn't want this warm. Some beers you might be able to drink warm temperature. This one I encourage you to drink with some reckless abandon to get to that bottom before it gets warm, especially if you're outside in a summer day, that sun's beating down on you. Put it in your mouth as quick as you can. And with that, we're going to move on to Around the League. And as we discussed previously, not a lot been going on in baseball because of the All-Star break. This year, for the third year in a row, the American League won the All-Star game. I asked the two of you gentlemen, does it even matter that the All-Star game matters?
It certainly seems to me like it matters to the guys. It seems to me like they're out there sweating and huffing and puffing and making, you know, real pitches and stuff like that. There's no cookies being thrown up there, and there's no lollygagging on the base paths and stuff. It seems to me like they take it seriously, so to me it does matter.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to it, really, it's just that final game. If it even goes to seven games, that's the one that, you know, would have an impact. But, you know, I don't know how much, is a home field advantage in baseball, really. I know fans get really excited around playoff time and the city can kind of come alive and stuff like that, so that the guys might have a little bit of something else, but... I mean, really, it just comes down to the pitchers making pitches and the batters doing what they need to at the plate. So I don't know how advantageous it is to have that, you know, to be the last team to get to bat or something like that. Really, I mean, you know, last year with Madison Bumgarner, he could have pitched. He pitched the same way in Kansas City as he did in San Francisco. So it was about him being the pitcher and his offense backing up his stellar outings out there. So
yeah, and for me, I almost would rather see maybe some guys grouping some pitches down the middle for guys to hit out of the park. I was fine when the home field advantage rotated from season to season, or if they would change it to the best record, and you know, whoever has the best record amongst those teams gets that seventh game. Because home field advantage is shown in baseball, it doesn't really matter that much. I mean, as Cody mentioned, Madison Bumgarner last season, it didn't matter where he was pitching. It didn't even matter if he was starting or coming out of the pen. He was just electric no matter what. And so, I don't know. I don't think it matters that it matters. I think we saw in AAA, I think, this season, they had their All-Star game decided by a home run derby of some sort. I guess they were tied and they had like a swing-off for it. I think that's a lot more fun than you know, having a game that matters. I don't think I don't think fans care about that. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe casual fans who are less plugged in than the three of us, maybe they still care about the All-Star game, who wins and loses. But for me, it's really just about seeing, like, I love seeing Jacob deGrom go out there and strike out the side in 10 pitches. That was awesome.
Or Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah,
oh, my gosh, that was fantastic. Oh, when Mark Teixeira just walks away, just pissed. Like, just like, that's the one at-bat I'm going to get in the All-Star game, and I have to come in and see 102.
that's what's fun about the All-Star game is you get to see every batter is a best versus a best, and that's what's fun about it. I mean, at least to me, it's about seeing those number one pitchers against those number one hitters and seeing what happens, and that's fun. And so it doesn't even matter to me about who wins that game. I don't know. And Jay, we talked about the home run derby before you were on the show. Do you have any thoughts to share about the new format?
No, I really enjoyed the new format. I really did. I like that they're willing to switch things up. This is the third or fourth switch we've seen in the last 10 years. But this has been my favorite for sure. I like the time limit. I like the brackets. This home run derby in particular, forget everything with Frazier, but yeah, as enjoyable as that was, but this home run derby this year might have been one of my favorites, certainly since the Hamilton Morneau in Yankee Stadium home run derby, but I thought they did a real good job with the home run derby this year. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, okay, then that's a clean sweep. We all enjoyed the improved home run derby. Is there anything else in baseball that either of you would like to touch on before we call it a show?
Well, I want to do a quick. I was hoping to do a quick round of pretender and contender. How do you guys feel about that?
All right, I'm up for pretender or contender.
Before we jump into that, I just want to say that while we're still kind of on the All-Star game, that man, I wish I would love to watch every single second of Mike Trout ever. Like, I just want a highlight reel of just every game, every at-bat, every pitch. Like,
I don't know if you can do this anymore. You used to be able to, through MLB TV, if you're watching on a computer, you sort of, like, select players, and it would notify you when they were up to bat.
Oh,
yeah, you can do that.
And I don't know if you can still do that, because I watch through my Roku now. But I used to have Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, and Michael Kadire plugged in, and anytime one of them came out, because I wanted to see those at bats. I just
the
loved
big
it.
Three. The big three.
Yeah, well, Michael Kadire, that was more about pulling on my heartstrings than pulling balls out of the park. But
yeah, you want to hear? I'm going next week. I'm going to Denver, and I'm going to a Rockies game, and Kadire doesn't play for him anymore. But I ordered on clearance. I ordered a Michael Kadire jersey to wear to Coors Field.
Nice.
Just because I didn't want to have a Tulowitzki or you know, someone currently on the team, so I got a Kadire jersey to wear on my first trip into Coors Field.
That'll be fun.
All right, Jay, you leading this segment?
I'm gonna lead it. Let's start with the Minnesota Twins. Pretender or contender?
Well, we talked about this a little bit earlier, and I think that the Twins, even if they limp along and finish right around 500 in the second half, that puts them at an 85-win team, and I think that makes them a contender, at least to get into the postseason. After that, it's a crapshoot.
I concur. Yeah, their chances
to get into the postseason without, you know, as long as they don't have that second half slump that we've had the past three seasons or so, that, yeah, they should have a pretty good shot at least getting that last wild card spot.
Let's go to the team that really, you guys know, reminds me of the Twins more than any other club, the Houston Astros. Pretender or contender?
Like the Minnesota Twins, the Astros are performing ahead of schedule, and they've also banked a bunch of wins. And so I don't think they're a serious contender. But like the Twins, I think they're right in line for that wild card position. And with Dallas Keuchel at the front of that rotation, if you had to face him in a one-game playoff right now, the Astros have the arms to make them a contender.
Yeah, Cal, it's hard to get excited about a team that's only won two of their last 10 and has lost six in a row. I mean, they're only a half game behind Los Angeles for that first place spot out there in the AL West. But when I look at the AL East, you know, I feel like there's teams out there that could pass by the Astros. You know, even within the AL Central, a team like Detroit could surpass the Astros here in the second half.
I'll put it to you two then. The Detroit Tigers, contender or pretender?
Pretender. I think Detroit is going to sink like a rock. I think the only team they're going to finish ahead of is either Chicago or Cleveland, maybe both. But, man, Detroit is in trouble.
Their bullpen is bad. And I think that's why we talked about it last week. They cleaned house and got some new blood out there. But the Miguel Cabrera injury isn't helping things for them. His first stint on the DL in his entire career. When they get him back, I mean, it's nice that the Twins have a nice little 4.5-game cushion over them. They would have to pass, you know, the Astros, the Rays. They're tied with the Orioles currently. You know, the Blue Jays over there in the AL East, too, are sitting with about the same record. So I would bet on those other teams before I would bet on the Tigers at this point.
Okay, Paul, what do you think?
I think that they're pretenders, but they're going to be – I think they're buyers at the deadline. They're going to be pushing to be contenders and trying to fight for that elusive World Series ring. But, I mean, they don't have the arms that they used to have, and Miguel Cabrera being out for the next 5-plus weeks, I just don't know that they have enough. They still have a lot, but, I mean, I wouldn't be completely surprised to see the Tigers move at least a part to try and upgrade. I mean, Jonas Cespedes, as good as he's been for the Tigers this season, I could see them moving him to try to bring something else in, maybe bring in another rotation arm. The Tigers just don't have enough, and that's why I think that they're going to be pretenders when all's said and done. But, Cody, you mentioned the Blue Jays, and the Blue Jays right now are a game under 500, 4.5 back of the Yankees in the East. And I think they're going to be buyers at the deadline, and I think that the Blue Jays, because of their offense, they are contenders. So I'll put the Blue Jays to the two of you.
I like the Blue Jays. I like their offense. Their rotations, just with when you have like Mark Burley and R.A. Dickey and whoever the heck else they got out there, I mean, that is just not impressive. They play in a crappy stadium. I think Batista is a little overrated at currently. I just don't think Batista's the same guy he was 2 years ago. I think Donaldson and Encarnacion are carrying that team right now. And really, you guys got Danny Valencia, Chris Colabello, Kevin Pillar making up huge chunks of the Blue Jays offense. I'm not buying it. I'm going to go pretender.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen with Bautista just that his shoulder has been hurting him so bad this season, and he's been trying to play through it, but it's obviously impacting him quite significantly. But I talked about it earlier in the show. I think this AL East, I think these teams are going to beat the heck out of each other as they're moving forward here. And that's why, you know, I talked about like a team like Detroit maybe sneaking in to one of those wild card spots, or even, you know, we have that Angels Astros little battle going out there in the AL West. So I think the Blue Jays, I think the Rays and Orioles ahead of them. I could see the Blue Jays jump in the Orioles, but they're not going to jump two other teams here in the second half to make up one of those wild card spots. They just have I just don't have enough faith in. They were using their offense to power through things. They just don't have a bullpen to get to where they need to be successful.
Okay, and then I know that the Baltimore Orioles are near and dear to Jay's heart as he grew up on the East Coast. But I think that they're pretenders, and I think as the season wears on, they're going to wish that there were sellers at the deadline instead of the buyers that they might be.
I unfortunately tend to agree with you mostly. I still think the Orioles are super dangerous. I mean, you look up and down their lineup, you know, starting with Jones and going on to Davis and even Weeters, and they've got some good arms. So I think the Orioles are for real. I just don't think they're for real this year.
I think they don't have enough Lou Ford in their lineup. is the issue here? You know that year they brought him back, they did some magical things, made it into October. So
yeah.
I think Adam Jones again having another sneaky good season. Machado, I think it's great that Machado's back after two, you know, horrible knee injuries and missing big parts of two seasons. To have him back out there and playing maybe the best defensive third baseman of anyone in either league, just his offense is back and clicking, that's good to see for a young, you know, early 20s player. So they have some good pieces there. But my money right now there on the AL East is on the Yankees and the Rays, and I think the Orioles are gonna are not gonna have the firepower to keep up with those two teams.
Yeah, I think that the Orioles, much like the Blue Jays, are surviving on the strengths of their offensive abilities right now. Wherein the Rays are exactly the opposite. They are an arm heavy team. And I think that those arms are going to be enough to make them contenders, if not for the division win, at least for that wild card spot. They'll be competing with the likes, I think, of the Astros, the Twins, and the Rays. I think will be those three teams really in contention for those last two spots in the postseason when all is said and done.
Okay.
And then I'd like to just briefly go over the NL Central. Because
I thought we were running low on time, but I was going to throw out the Pirates. I think the Pirates might, as after the Reds have disintegrated, it seems like, and are going to have a fire sale here this week.
I think that the Pirates have to be contenders. They've got the second best record in all of baseball, behind only the division leading Cardinals.
Man, that division is crazy.
I mean, even the Cubs at 47-40. Are 8 games back to the Cardinals, and I think the Cubs are absolutely contenders right now. I mean,
we could see three playoff teams come out of that National League Central, the division winner, and then the two teams playing for that wild card spot.
Yeah, and then I think the only other teams really left that need to be considered are the San Francisco Giants, who are currently 4.5 games back of the Dodgers at 46-43. And
buyers, the Giants are going to be buyers.
What about the New York Mets, 47-42, 2 games back of the Nationals, despite the fact that the Mets started the season with almost a 10-game lead on the Nationals?
I think both of those teams are buyers. I think both of those teams are very much alive. It's going to depend on luck and what they do at the deadline, but I'd classify both as contenders.
Yeah, I think long as the season progresses, the Mets are gonna fall off some. I think the Giants will pass by the Mets, but it's, you know, with how many games the Cardinals, Pirates, and Cubs are gonna have against one another in the second half, that's gonna be some must watch baseball here in the Midwest as those teams are fighting with one another. You know, they get the opportunity to beat up on, you know, like the Brewers and the Reds in their division, but still, they're that'll be fun to watch. Definitely, these two, the AL Central for Twins fans, and then the NL Central will both be must watch baseball here as we're heading into the second half.
All right, well, that'll do us here for the first episode of the second half of the 2015 season. Thanks for joining us on the Talk to Contact podcast. From West Fargo, Cody Christie, the No Dak Twins fan. from the interstate outside of the shores of Lake Minnetonka, J double underscore Horn, and I'm the baseball pirate for E. Rolf Pleiss, who's not here. Go Hoyas.
Free, didn't even live with a day, not a moment. Can't give me a dream.